All right, well, so this is a Zen poem, we call it, so it must be saying something about what Zen is exactly, or some aspect of it, I assume, I figure, you know. And then I gave you this a reading from Norman, a little essay from Norman, where he's talking about trying to teach Zen, and he's talking about are there teachers, aren't there teachers, and sort of implied, I think, in the whole piece is, well, if there's a teacher of Zen, then there must be Zen, right? And he says, yes, there is Zen. So why don't we do a little discussion in small groups of the essay from Norman. What jumped out at you, and what's your sense? I mean, it's sort of like nothing's really spelled out, right, in any of this material, but what's your sense from, you know, what he says, or reading between the lines, or kind of what he talks about at the end, about the sort of feeling of all this? What is Zen? That's my question. If there's a teacher of Zen or not a teacher of Zen, what is Zen according to that essay? You know, is it a feeling? Is it a spirit? Is it a way of life? What is it exactly? And is there anything in that essay that led you to believe that? So once you find a group of three people, maybe people you haven't talked to quite as much, I don't know. You may need to move around the room and mess up the nice circle. Let's find a group of three. And yeah, what is Zen according to Norman? What's your sense from that, you know? What is it that Zen teachers are teaching or not teaching anyway? You know?
Of course.
Do you guys need to do four?
And maybe split up and have 2 4s. Yeah, let's have 2 4s. Yeah, 2 is a little small. 4 is better than 2. These guys need a 4th. Or maybe those guys do. Somebody. Hey, Paul's beauty.
But, you know, one thing though, is that
that personality, that combination of sentences or occurs, because we just conceptualize what this is. There's the teacher, like, what you're saying, to describe it. So it's what I have words that create a person that is the growth of my opinion.
Feel free to finish that thought, and we'll come back together. Well, what did you come up with in your group? These guys are coming up with really good stuff. I'm eager to find out what. Compelling. This is not the worst topic for us because, like, here we are supposedly running a Zen center together. So, what is Zen anyway? took us 25 years before we were comfortable asking anybody that. You know, what are we doing? So what came up for you? You know, if this is a poem about Zen and Norman's talking about teaching Zen, what is Zen? Is it a thing? Is it a process? Is it a feeling? An idea? Not idea? What came up in your group?
It's dialogue and relationship.
It's dialogue and relationship.
And not teacher and student might give the idea that there's a direction in the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally don't definitely see it as an exchange.
Mm-hmm.
That one couldn't be without the other.
Okay. So some kind of exchange is happening. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, thanks. Yeah. What else, Ken?
We were talking about how he talks about basically fundamentally opening to everybody.
Uh-huh.
And it's an acceptance of things as they are, including the people.
Acceptance, openness.
You're an openness, and it's mm-hmm. not, you know, it's definitely a feeling of opening up to everything.
Mm-hmm. Was he repeats a couple times, everything will be okay. Yeah, everything would be okay. What's that mean? Yeah. It's everything would be okay. And this stuff about the teacher, you can just, so he talked about the teacher embodying that, so we're all trying to embody that, right? Yeah. Yeah, okay, so a sense of acceptance, dialogue, what else?
Well, we talked about not ever really being able to get it right.
It's about not getting it right?
About not getting it right.
Uh-huh.
And my sense is, and he talked about it in here, about having faith and trust,
uh-huh.
but not the kind of faith and trust in yourself in that sense, because you know you won't get it right, but just having faith and trust in
uh-huh.
the process and in, you know, the flow of life itself.
Okay, yeah. Well, kind of like there's a paragraph about giving Dharma talks, makes me think of, where he realized that these frustrations were about kind of acknowledging that the teacher isn't exactly the one giving the Dharma talk. You kind of are, you kind of aren't, right? So it's a trust and a faith thing, that what it comes out of your mouth is the Dharma, right?
I like that idea of the Dharma talk is just, it's another ritual.
Yeah.
And so...
Yeah.
You know.
Another ritual.
I mean, you know how sometimes we, after a Dharma talk, we say, oh, good talk, you know?
Yeah.
And
I'm not fond of that. Yeah, I was trying to change that at one point, but we're so polite, we have to do that. But, what does that mean? Yeah. So it sounds like a certain degree of equanimity or evenness or something is Zen also. Like, it's all okay no matter what it is. Huh? There's no good talk or bad talk, you know, or... But that's not exactly. But it's
that's
both.
Not
yeah.
It
yeah. It's not it either. See, yeah, that's the problem. Yeah.
I like the way Norman finished that article with us having faith in the goodness of each person.
Uh huh. Yeah.
And not to forget that it includes us too, no matter how much we fight it.
Yeah.
Because we're not worthy, but everybody else. No, we need to include ourselves. And it reminds me of Norman saying, be humble, be of service, see Buddha in everyone.
Yeah. Trust yourself and the basic goodness of everyone. Mm-hmm. Which includes trusting your own basic goodness. The secret ingredient in Zen, he says teaching Zen, we just leave the word teaching out, right? The brilliant spark in Zen... It turns out is the secret ingredient in Zen, it turns out, is the brilliant spark of human goodness in each person. Practice awakens it, and it does the rest on its own, eventually. What's that word? Yeah, you can read any of these paragraphs and just leave out the word teacher. You just have to be willing to be there and be surprised. So to me, it's also that willingness to be surprised, a willingness to be here. A lot of patience, apparently, right? Eventually, you got to be patient. Yeah. What else? What else came up? Is this why you're here? To be patient and trust your basic goodness and recognize that everything's okay. Why are you here? Yeah. So this is a good thing to keep considering, right? Yeah. Why are we here? What are we doing? You know. And And of course, Master Shirdo would say, well, maybe some of that is knowable and describable, right? That's the light. And some of why we're here, we're never going to be able, no matter how brilliant we are, if a writer or a speaker, we're never going to quite exactly say it, right? You know, maybe we're expressing it other ways, I don't know, ways that aren't about concepts, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, we were talking about the connection between Taoism, which I said maybe is a little overblown, but Chris pointed out, yes, but it's there. And that's like in the very beginning of the Tao Te Ching, right? You know, the way that's spoken of is not the true way, you know? Yeah, so we might as well try our best because we're at the moment sitting in a circle talking, but then we'll spend the rest of the evening exactly not talking, right? So is that any more or less an expression of Zen? Is one better than the other, you know? Which is also kind of what this next section is about. So I want to look at lines 27 through 32 of the poem. And this is the light and darkness business. Time for light and darkness. So light here means like differentiation, things we can look at and talk about. And when we say look at, we're including internal things as well. So that's the other thing we got to kind of keep reminding ourselves, that we have this Western bias to divide the material from the mental, and that's not really at play in Buddhism. All the mental stuff that can be described is just also stuff. You know, it's also light. And the dark stands for the other side of all this equation, right? What's undescribable, you know? But unknowable isn't quite right either, because somehow we're pointing to it with this poem and we're tuning into it somehow in the way we live and in Zazen practice. So it's not exactly unknowable, but it can't be described with language. So the darkness, maybe another way to think about the darkness is mystery, you know, the mystery of all this. Like in Norman's piece, like what is it that we're having trust and faith in exactly? Maybe that's the darkness. And you know, the darkness is the deep way that it's somehow more than just the stuff, right? Somehow it's more than just anything we can talk about or describe. And like we were saying about good Dharma talks, bad Dharma talks, on the one hand, you know, there's no such thing. On the other hand, a skillful Dharma talk where there's a feeling to it, right? It points to something, it helps us, you know. After a good Dharma talk, your connection to something or other has changed, right? There's a result, right? You know, I think that's what people mean. That was a great Dharma talk because they felt something. And maybe that's an example of somehow a skillful use of light can point to the darkness, which is what Shirdo is trying to do here, I think, right? Why else would you write a poem, right? If you can't talk about this. And that's the great irony of Zen, of all the Zen literature, is that we attribute this early teaching to Bodhidharma, that Zen is a special transmission, not depending on words and letters outside the teaching, right? Have you heard this kind of stuff?
Mm-hmm.
This is supposed to have been the very beginning. Like, that was the starting idea. No words and letters outside the teaching. And then we proceed to create all these words, you know?
Yeah.
And have Dharma talks and study groups and, you know, me asking you, what is Zen? You know, you should have said, outside, no transmission, outside. You should have jumped up and you know, tossed me out, you know.
40 blows.
40 blows, Tim, you're out.
Yeah.
Now we see you're not a true teacher. But yet we seem to need both. And so in the light there's darkness, in the dark there's light. So it's a lot like the famous parallel in the Heart Sutra, right? Form is emptiness, emptiness is form. And by the way, then it says, sensations, perceptions, formations, and consciousness are also like this. That sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
Just want to mention that is actually a tricky little formula there, where they're just doing a shorthand thing. So what they mean is that all these five ways of looking at experience that we think of as me, the stuff that the forms and sensations and perceptions, formations and mental formations, that each one of those is emptiness. So that means form is emptiness, emptiness is form, perceptions are emptiness, emptiness is perception. It means mental formations are emptiness, emptiness is mental formations, and same with consciousness. So the true nature of everything is emptiness, and emptiness is the true nature. And the kicker here is that then words fail us, you know, right? That's the problem, right? So the words kind of draw the territory or point us to the frontier or inspire us to look in that direction. And one way to think about it is, you know, from the point of view of light, which is our usual point of view, darkness is a problem, right? Like there's the kind of metaphor of knowledge is like a lamp. Knowledge is like a lamp, like your personal amount of knowledge is like a lamp that shines a little white, a little circle of light around you. And if you only cared about light, right, if you only cared about knowledge, you only cared about information, you only cared about stuff that can be manipulated and understood in that way, then we have this terrible problem, right? Which is we want more light, you know, we want more knowledge, we want more of that kind of understanding, but then as our circle of light gets larger, what happens? The circle of darkness gets larger, right? And you recognize this famous saying, right? The more you know, the more you don't know. So maybe in a way, Zen is kind of trying to provide another perspective to all this, a way of thinking about knowledge and learning, that's not a problem, that's a blessing, you know, that's a blessing. You recognize that there's much more darkness than light, and you can relax, you know, that your circle of light is enough because it's held and supported by the darkness. Does that make sense? So, you know, so it just depends on our point of view, right? We can feel threatened by darkness or we can embrace darkness. But in darkness there is light, right? So then we get all excited about darkness, and that can happen too. Sometimes people get really excited about special experiences in meditation. And they think, oh, if I just could get the right experience, then I'd understand enlightenment, emptiness, the darkness, or whatever, you know, beyond the light. And there are interesting experiences that happen. Norman talks about that a little bit in his article. Did you catch that little piece in there? Mm-hmm. Where he's like, yeah, it's not really what it's about, but you hang around long enough, it's going to happen. So it could be a really long time. Well, not yet, could be the answer, yeah. Yeah. You have different kinds of, you know, we all have different kinds of experiences, and they're all, you know. But if you just want darkness, and then somehow the light seems less than, right? That's the problem with that, you know. And you've maybe probably met people like that, and they show up doing workshops and stuff in the circuit too. But you know, if it's just about darkness and then light doesn't matter, then you're kind of stuck too. So it's about this kind of great interplay of light and dark, dark and light. You know, can we let them co-arise and coexist and actually like support each other? So a couple interesting things in Suzuki Roshi's chapter on this. He talks about, well, it's so hard to talk about this that he kind of objected to this translation where it says, in the light there is darkness, but don't take it as darkness. And in the dark there is light, don't see it as light. And he goes off in this long, confusing kind of thing about the Japanese involved, and there's two different Japanese words for the verb to be, and I don't speak Japanese, so I didn't really try to track that too much. But then I looked at my limited understanding of the Chinese here, and I said, oh, well, it's the same problem in there, too. So let's do a little more spelunking in the cave of Chinese poetry. So, in the light there is darkness. It's like the third double sheet here, so... So let's explain. So did you find that one? In the light there is darkness. Okay, you can help each other find it. It's in the middle of a back page. Sorry, I didn't put page numbers. Found it. So let's look carefully at the literal translations of these five characters, and I want to especially focus on the first and the third. So we have a character that means to conform to, which is dang. And then we have light. And then we have a character for the center, zhong. I listened to little recordings. It kind of sounded like that. And then we have you, and then we have darkness. So it doesn't say dark is light, or light. It doesn't say light is dark, exactly. It's something about in the middle of all this, in the middle of darkness, in the middle of light, this first character, there's something that conforms, there's something that connects. And this character, Deng, means to conform to, or it means to accept. To accept, like the way two things that fit together accept each other. So one way to look at this is light is deeply accepting of the dark, and dark is deeply accepting of the light, or conforming to, like fitting together. So it's like light and dark fit together, conform to each other, accept each other. So that seems like pretty interesting to me, and I'm kind of just blowing smoke because I don't really know Chinese, but we can assume that it means something like that, I think, that this isn't about light is dark, dark is light, because that's just a tautology, and what does that even tell us, you know? It doesn't really mean anything, you know? Then why talk about light and dark if they're the same thing? But this gets a little more interesting. If there's something in there that's about fitting together and accepting and conforming to, and not conforming like conformists, but like fitting, you know, shapes that conform to each other. And by the way, zhong in the middle there just means middle, which is a cool little ideogram. You can see how that's a little symbol you do to make middle. Which is this. And so this is actually just a little fun Chinese side fact here. This actually is half of the word for China. So if you look at gates in Chinatown or Chinese restaurants, you will see something like that. And that's Middle Kingdom. So that's China. So middle shows up. Just remember that middle is in Terrell Thompson's name, too. So, but this, I think it's an important word, though. There's something in the middle of light and something in the middle of darkness. And it's all a certain kind of connecting and interacting. So it's not just that one is the other and the other is one. It's that they have this very intimate, right, very close connection. And so maybe that's a good description of what we're trying to do in Zazen, you know, is feel or experience or make room for this intimate connection between what is knowable and what is not knowable in that way. Maybe what is feelable. And so maybe another way to look at what is Zen, you know, from Norman's piece here is Zen's a feeling or an appreciation for this wholeness, right? Because he's talking about, right, trusting your life, trusting Buddha, trusting that it all works out okay. And that has to include stuff you can't know, right? Which is not our usual MO, right? We like to trust things that we understand, right? I trust that because, right? So there's no because it's in the dark, right?
So, yeah. Do you think it's also like saying what is known and not known fits together, or what is seen and hidden fits together?
Exactly, and that's coming up a little bit later, right? In the next week we'll talk about this, that phenomena exist, box and lid fit, so things just fit together in that same way, you know. Principle responds, right? Principle is light, but somehow it responds, right? So there's a darkness there. Yeah, exactly. And then we have a second little coda here. So first we have, in the light there is darkness, but don't take it as darkness. In the dark there is light, but don't see it as light. So it's a two pairs, right? So we looked at the first half, in the light there is darkness, in the dark there is light. But then this business about don't take it as light. Oh, no, sorry. I'm getting a little mixed up here.
Don't see it as light.
Yeah, don't see it as light. Actually, I'm moving on to the next part. Sorry, I'm just getting a little scrambled up. There's too much light in my brain right now. It's like bouncing around in there. So they talk about that relationship, and then they talk about that relationship in a different way in line 31 and 32. Light and dark oppose one another, like the front and back foot in walking. So I got interested in oppose one another, because that sounds very confrontational. It doesn't really seem to fit, this idea of them fitting together. How can they oppose one another? So I looked a little bit at the characters for that too. So let's look at that, oppose one another. So it's on the next page, light and dark oppose one another.
That's a strong word.
Yeah, it is. So in that little set of five characters, we have the one that means light and the one that means dark. So that's straightforward. And some kind of particle that means each. So each light, each dark. And then, this is interesting. We have the character Xiang, which means together. So they're together, you know. And then we do have a character that means opposition or opponent or enemy. So I thought that's interesting. There is some opposition here, but they're also together, you know what I mean? And I was thinking about that, and I thought, well, that's maybe what we've lost track of how to do in our culture, is when we oppose each other, we're separate, right? But light and dark may have some opposition or some, you know, tension, right, dynamic tension, but they do it while they're together, you know, they don't leave each other in that way. You going to say something, Grace?
I thought that was also really interesting, because the first one sets up this really strong opponent or enemy,
right,
which is something really radical, and then it has the front and the back,
right,
end walking,
yeah,
which is super fluid. So I thought that you intentionally had given us Norman's article as homework, because maybe it's that light and darkness and all these things, they are like Norm describes Zen, they are dialogue.
Right. Between
and
the front and the back foot, between light and dark, yeah, yeah.
So it's our tendency to set things up as opposites, as enemies.
Right.
While in reality, maybe we just need to turn that around and hold both things, because they're part of it.
Right. Yeah,
and
they're together.
Even though,
yeah,
it's not against each other, but holding both equally, like two birds of the, two wings of the bird, and things,
right,
like that.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Needing both.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty brilliant of me. Eh? Yeah. I don't know if
absolutely.
I think that probably came from the, that came from the darkness, though. So
I was sure you did that intentionally.
Yeah.
Because,
well, kind of semi. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that's the theme that I was interested in. Yeah. And I think it is an issue of there are some issues of translation here. I mean, again, I'm being a little speculative about the Chinese, since I don't actually speak Chinese. But Suzuki Roshi was saying similar things about the Japanese version when you read, if you ever read his stuff, that yeah, things can just get lost in translation too. So oppose one another sounds to us like fighting, but it sounds like the characters are saying together in dynamic tension, right? Yeah, so yeah, like two wings of the bird, or then this, the metaphor of the front and the back foot, and that's pretty literal in the Chinese, so that one's cool. You know, the next part, it says there's a character that means comparing, and another one means comparable to, so sort of like front, back, walk, you know? It's like front, back, walk, right? So that's exactly the way it's... As you can see how hard this is to turn into English, you know. It doesn't literally say the front and the back foot in walking. In fact, the word foot is not even there, actually. It's just front and back and walking, or stepping. But yeah, so the front foot is not like, I'm better than you, back foot. I'm out in front. I'm the winner, you know, I'm the best. Because it understands that, you know, 1 second later, it's the back foot, right? So they are different, you know. There's a difference. They're in some kind of opposition, I suppose, or, you know, they're opposites. Front is the opposite of back, right? Front is the opposite of the back, and yet it's just one walking, you know, one pair of feet walking, you know. So, you know, and that's the hope, I think, for us that we might hope for as a society. Can we understand that's the kind of opposition it is? It's not like, you know... Seems like the way we're doing, especially the political dialogue now, is like, well, let's just chop the two legs off and stick them in opposite corners, and that'll work out much better, you know? No. You know, two feet in walking. So isn't that interesting? Yeah.
It's sort of like a binary star system. I mean, the gravity's pulling them together, and the centrifugal force is pulling them apart. Right?
But they're
just spinning around each other, and they're in opposition, but
right, right. That's a great way of thinking about it, yeah.
Well, that's much more profound than what came to my mind, which is that I'm one of seven siblings, and the way that my mother broke up squabbles most successfully was coming in and you two deserve each other, and walking out with a... so, I mean, what are you going to do? It's just, okay. You know, absolutely, it takes two to tango. She's absolutely.
Rather than breaking up the fight, which would be separating, she pointed out the togetherness. So
yeah.
You're stuck with each other for life. So
yeah, and it's
so yeah. Yeah, exactly. Which kind of brings up this question of relationship. You know, I think I claimed in the class description that this whole poem was something to do with relationships. So let's explore that a little bit. So light and dark, right? So we've got this theme that keeps coming and coming and coming and coming at us, you know. There's stuff that can be talked about and stuff that can be described and stuff that can be planned for and remembered, right? And yet there's something else happening, right, the whole time, through all of it, you know, together, through all of it. There's some feeling, some mystery, something more, you know, that can't exist, that doesn't, it's like bigger, you know, something's happening that's bigger than the words. So I thought we would drop back into small groups again briefly here and just explore that a little bit, maybe even get a different group this time, so you might have to get up and move around a little bit. So how do light and dark work in personal relationship? That's my question.
In personal relationships.
How do light and dark work in relationships? And, you know, and maybe we kind of know what the light is, but what's the dark? You know, what is it we're trying, you know, what is that that's beyond what you can talk about or plan? Or does that make sense? Find a group. See what comes up. Maybe something interesting will come up. What is this light and darkness business in relationships?
Sure. We've only talked together once.
This will be a little shorter, so just jump right in. See what you can think of.
She's just not oriented towards this. She's looking at it. Yeah. Yeah. Orient yourself.
I'm listening to you.
I'm so close to
it. It's a good place to write that.
The best it can be, and you're like, and now it's changing, you know. It's like when you're at that,
what's the best?
So it's like in the and it sort of involves into the bottom line, there is darkness in it.
And just being honest about looking at that versus, you know, creating a perfect world or something, which is like,
and just what is the best darkness?
Right now, you're on the dining table.
Thanks for exploring that, and that's, of course, an endless deep topic, too, like all these things. I think one aspect of light and dark that's been in my mind is the way you can really know somebody really well, that's the light, but not really, right? That's the dark, right? Not really, you know? And if you think you do, you're just stuck in the light, right? You know? If you think you don't get it, then you're still, you know, anyway. So next week could be the last week of this class, I think, if I'm calculating right. And so I thought it would be a fun little homework project for each of us, me included, to write our own poem. Doesn't have to be long, doesn't have to be 44 lines long or anything like that. Your own poem that's some expression of this harmony of difference and unity, of light and dark, of knowability and what can't be known, of maybe some of the themes that came up for you around Norman's piece, around trust and faith, around around experience and perception, maybe. And reading the little couple sheets of Dogen poetry may be inspiring. You know, some of them are just about experiencing reality in some kind of direct way, right? That's also light and dark, you know. It's all just kind of right here, you know, like for instance, dewdrops on a blade of grass, having so little time before the sun rises, let not the autumn wind blow so quickly on the field. You know, there's, you know what I mean? There's a feeling there for this whole thing, right? Of dark and light and dewdrops and wind and, you know, what are So does that sound kind of fun? And I, you know, we won't force you to share your work next week, but if you volunteer, we'll enjoy it, you know. But you don't have to decide that ahead, you know, to see what pops out. And, you know, I think the best thing to do in that kind of invitation is not to be like, how do I create a piece of literature, but just after Zazen one day, probably Wednesday, just, you know, sit Zazen and get out your pen and just see what comes out, you know what I mean? See what comes out. Just contemplate this stuff a little bit and just sit down and write for a few minutes, see what pops out. It'll be the perfect expression. Because how could there be any one right expression of this anyway, right? That'd be impossible. Make sense? Mm-hmm. All right, so poetry next week. And we'll finish the poem next week, too. Let's end with a little more Dogen. This is at the on the back of the Dogen handout, if you have that. I got one more here, if you ended up with that one.
Well, if you don't.
I didn't get one last week.
Did you need poem?
Could you email it?
Yeah, I'll email it. Yeah, I keep meaning to. Forgot. So these are just so lovely. This are his little expressions of why he practices. We'll end with this. Yeah, they're called Waka, which is a style of poetry on the Bodhisattva life. At least somebody put that title on them, not him. So listen to this intention that he had, you know. Awake or asleep. What I pray for in my grass hut is to bring others across before myself. Although this ignorant person may never become a Buddha, I vow to take others across because I am a monk. Each moment, awake or asleep, in my grass-thatched hut, I offer this prayer. May Shakyamuni Buddha's compassion envelop the world. What can I accomplish? Although not yet a Buddha, let my priest's body be a raft to carry sentient beings to the other shore. That's a great one. I didn't know that one before this hand-up came to my mind. Let my body be a raft. You know, climb on, climb on. Okay, thanks a lot. See you next week. And by the way, if you are not up for staying for the whole evening, could I humbly suggest don't be all or nothing. Just stay for one period. You know? It's nice. Stay and sit a minute. If you're not up for that, it's fine. No shame. Just suggest that. Okay. No shame. Doesn't have to be all or nothing. No.